Hi, everybody. This is Vic Mignogna, Broly from Dragon Ball Z, Edward Elric from Full Metal Alchemist, and this is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live.
It's time. Talk time. Let's go. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Live. Started in the 80s with Matt Cross. Dudes in the hood might have called that soft, but I carried that cross like Jesus did. Fast forward, I teach the kids to learn how to let go, live life, and show love to all things that don't matter. Matter where y'all from, and luckily there's a show called Talk Time. We've been waiting for this for a long time. Dax kicks the facts on all the geek news, special guests and unbiased reviews. Suburban kids, the hipster street dudes, all can learn something new. Me too. I heard words when no faith is empty. I stayed the course so my haters tempt me. Beep the podcast, that'll make them envy. It ain't too trendy, it's ACMG. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk Time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Anime, comics, movies, and games. Come on and let's get it. Talk time. Live.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live, the Prime Show. I am your host, Xavier Josiah. Folks, we're here on our last podcast before we go back to our normal schedule. I've been running rampant last week with different podcasts, multiple podcasts, because there was so much going on and so many shows and movies coming out that I had to do multiple podcasts. And we're here on this very day, which is MLK Day, and a day, honestly, that I often embrace and celebrate, but at the same time, I gotta address, this is not a one-day thing. This should be an everyday thing. MLK, Martin Luther King Jr. Day, should be, his philosophy, his ideology, should be embraced on a daily basis. This is not a holiday situation where we celebrate and have a holiday sale at CVS or a car commercial. This is a very important day, probably should be more important than any other day of the year, because it embraces equality. It embraces justice. And if we're here talking about all things anime, comics, movies, and games, within every one of those genres, there's always a hero that we admire. One that fights for everybody, one that fights for true justice, and not just the American way, the world way. I mean, we need to fight for our own equalities, our love, our passion, to become the unity or the united community that we often say we should be, but we never act on it. We need to act on this more than ever. I've said this before in different types of, in different shows and in formats. We need not only to help each other, we need to protect and save each other, not just from, you know, different types of harms and hurts, but just becoming friends, becoming united, getting to know each other, learning about each other more, respecting each other's cultures, our ways, or whatever. That is, in fact, what this day should be about. And in fact, it should be a everyday ideology, a philosophy that we should go by every single day. Now, I know it's weird that I'm talking about this, as today we're going to be reviewing The Punisher. So, like, the the possibility of it being on MLK Day is really weird, but I am committed. I'm going to go through with it, but I just wanted to address it. You know, I hate saying Happy MLK Day because it really sounds like a holiday, which in some ways, in some form of matter, it is based on the Holiday Act or whatever, but it should be more meaningful than just a holiday, because people tend to treat it like a one-day thing. They want to post on social media. They want to post online and, you know, I guess in their minds is them showing their part and their commitment, but where does that, what happens after that day is gone? What happens after February is gone, when Black History Month is there? How much are we embraced? Or how much are we working together as a culture? Not just one based on one ethnicity, just a culture of multiple cultures. How are we doing this? How can we become at all best? I truly believe that it shouldn't be based on black, white, gay, straight, whatever. Doesn't matter. or whatever, you know, ethnicity or, you know, culture that you are, it really should just come down to good or bad. You know, good or evil. That's what should it just really come down to. Because in all its essence, good nor evil has no color, no creed, no orientation. It just, you are good or you are bad. That's what she would just base it down. It is, should be that black and white to some extent. But within each black and white, there's a trace of color within there. And multicultural and everything within both. It just comes down to morality, people, and how we stand on it. So, in honor of the great Doctor's Day, basically, I'm here to say, and I always will be, and the ACMG way was fathered, was parented, was more, it was basically conditioned into the ideas of Martin Luther King. Doesn't matter what race, what creed, what color, what orientation, what, you know, sort of religion or whatever, or mentality or whatever that you have. I already said creed, I get that. That we all love what we love together. If we're fans of anime, doesn't matter who you are. You're a fan of anime. If you're a fan of comics, same thing. Movies, same thing. Games, same thing. That's always been ACMG way. That's why when I put that logo together, when I put it in, it had the intention of everybody enjoying what we provide, what we do in honor of our favorite fandoms. It's not just one person. So I would, as a black African-American, as a, you know, born and raised in this country with a interesting 23andMe, you know, record, I can tell you this, that I will absolutely never make anything or design anything based on just one culture. You know, I am black, but that doesn't mean I can still be black and still represent and still do everything that everybody else does. I am black. You just have to realize that I am black, but I am more than anything, I am talented. I am, you know, creative. I am charismatic. You know, you have to go for those features, not just based on what I am. And I will continue to do that, but I cannot segregate my people with, you know, into one thing, not being able to learn about any other cultures or whatever like that, because we're doing ourselves a disservice by doing that. So I will never have create anything that says black this, black that. I am black. There is nothing going to stop that. What I want to be is a person of color that just happens to be, but a human that is embracing all. That is always what I've always been, and it's always what I grew up to understand, and that's what I will continue to be. So ACMG is for the people. It is the ever essence of Martin Luther King Jr. And for that, we celebrate him. We celebrate it all. Peace be with you all, and let's get this going. Let's talk about it. We're here to talk about The Punisher. It's been out last Friday. I got a chance to check out all 13 episodes of what could possibly be the end of this series. And, man, this is crazy. And for the record, just want to let you guys know, there won't be another segment of What's New in the World of ACMG. There is no news right now, most likely because of today or whatever like that. But I've mentioned so much news and I've done so many podcasts anyway. So this is going to be only about The Punisher, and we're going to talk about it. And I got enough things to talk about this series, because it was really, really good. I really enjoyed it. Honestly, not only did I enjoy this, but we're going to talk about the ending too, but they couldn't have ended this. This is probably the best way to end any of this than they did with all the seasons. Even when they did, I think when they finally figured out what was going on, I'm not sure, but when they finally figured out what was going on with Luke Cage or Iron Fist or even Daredevil, I think at this point, I don't know how long it took or if it was already filmed, but it felt like it was already set up to know or to prepare for what can possibly happen. And it was awesome the way they did it. So we'll talk about that and more from there. But yeah, let's get down to it. So again, right now, if you haven't seen this and you want to see it, but you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen to this until you've actually got a chance to do it. If you want to listen to this in a case of wanting to find out whether this is worth doing, follow me. So let's talk about the story real quick. The story this time around has Frank still on the run, but bumps in. But we see him in a bar, and he bumps into this kid who just happens to be at a bar. Take note, this teenager, She named Rachel at the time, but she bumps into Frank, kind of giving him like a kind of a message, like and getting really rude with her. But he's taking notes of the way she's responding and how she's responding, so he knows he's reading the signs. And again, if you listen to the show, if you listen to this show before, and we talk about protect and save, with all the situations going on with the grooming and the child molestation or in the sexual assault, you know, situations that we're trying to bring more awareness of, and I always say know the signs. This is exactly an example of what I was talking about, because Frank knew that something was going on, and when she bumped into him and she kind of got like smart with him, he saw the signs that something worse was going on, and he started really kind of investigating and noticed that, you know, it was just happening more than once, and how she responded. Know the signs of when somebody's in trouble. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying do what Frank did after this, but definitely know the signs when somebody's in trouble and find a way to help them out, if all possible, in somewhat way. If you can't beat the living crap out of people like Frank does, and I don't condone that at all, then find another way, because you need to know when somebody's in need. It was blatant when I did it. I actually had to fend this woman with a child off years ago, back when I was, before I was married. I was with my ex, Nicole, and we were walking around my old neighborhood, and lo and behold, this guy was just literally abusing this woman who had a kid with a stroller. And I'm just not the type that's just going to stop and just walk off for it and just let this happen. I'm sorry. This is way before Me Too, by the way. And lo and behold, I'm just trying to hold off and see how far this goes. And the minute he started pushing around and the baby stroller fell, I immediately, my actions just immediately went and shot over to him and literally speared the dude off of her and held him back and then tell him, like, dude, you're not getting anywhere near this person. And of course, when people try to fend off of people like that, a lot of times, and I'm not saying every time, so I'm not saying to pick your battles. You do what you feel you need to do, that or what you can do. But a lot of times these guys are freaking, they're cowards. And when I came up to him and held him back, and I'm like, dude, you're not harming these people already. The baby stroller went down. The baby went down with it, okay? And apparently he wouldn't do anything to me, but he kept cursing her out. And we made sure that she was safe and okay and made sure the authorities knew and everything. It was just sad. I mean, it was just really, really sad. But these are the type of things that happen. We can't just stand idly by. I'm not saying be as vigilant as what I did. I'm just saying find a way to help these people, because what if it was you? You would want somebody to be there for you when you needed to. You know, that's pretty much what I'm saying. But just don't go the way that Frank did, because he went overboard here. But it is what it is. But Frank eventually goes on to help her in order to find out who is on the hunt for her and why. That's including a God-willing assassin who is damned by the very book that he praises for his sins. That name is John Pilgrim. A guy that I don't believe is ever in the comic books, if I'm correct. I actually searched for that. But he's in there, and he's no joke. Absolutely no joke. Meanwhile, Billy Russo's back, a.k.a. Jigsaw, still scarred and deeply injured. Both scarred, by the way, mentally and physically, at the hands of Frank. And deeply injured because of it. And Frank nearly destroyed him at the end of the first season, as you guys remember. But apparently he lost some of his memory, or we're led to believe that he lost some of his memory. It's still kind of iffy as to whether he was faking it or not, but he did admit to later on in the episodes that some of it he didn't remember, but some of it he did. And as things started coming back to him, he really started coming hard, you know, during the season. And he, especially when he figured out why Frank was trying to come after him and why did he do this to him or whatnot, it was like really crazy. Meanwhile, Homeland Security operative Dana Madani is back as well. Remember, she was in last season. She had like sort of a sexual affair with Billy Russo, only to find out that he was, you know, causing a lot of trouble back then. And he shot her in the head. So that didn't help either. So she's back and is fighting through her own trauma based on that situation. Krista DeMont is a psychologist that is helping Billy Russo start a new life. But is she really successful in doing so? That's the question here. So you got all this going on in situations, and it just turns out to become, you know, scenarios and situations that it gets way out of hand, way bigger. There's a bigger threat going on in the back. There's somebody responsible for all this, or people responsible for everything that's going on here. And it's just all out crazy going on. Let's run down the cast of this season. It's really hard to talk about John Berthold because there's never anything bad I want to talk about with him. He reigns supreme, and he will go down as the best and champion of anyone who's ever played the Punisher. And that's everybody in the past. It's been like he's the fourth Punisher. In my opinion, and maybe in a lot of people's opinion, he is the best Punisher at this place. I mean, for one thing, he looked the part, he played the part. You know, he's way more believable as the Punisher than anybody. He played as not only just the Punisher himself, where I think that's where all the other movies went wrong, because every one of them were the Punisher, but they were never Frank Castle. And in this case, with John Berthold's role as Frank Castle, you get to see Frank Castle, and then you get to see the Punisher. There are times when he's a very fatherly person. And the one thing I loved about it, the first episode, when he kind of helped out the bartender, and, you know, the bartender ended up inviting him to the house. They end up doing their thing, but comes to find out that she has a son. And when I noticed this happened last season too, when he's at somebody else's house and there's a kid there, especially a young boy, he respects the hell out of that kid. Like, he understands that, and it's always a single parent situation too. You know, he respects the kid and realizes that he is the man of the house, and he respects him that way. So that is Frank Castle right there that you see. Now, granted, if the kid is actually being a bit of a butthead, then he will stand out for it like he did last season. But this time he did it again. He was in this house, and, you know, he knew how to handle the kid. He was being a father. So there was still a human aspect and a man who was scarred and damned for life for the pains that he had, rather in the army or in the situation where he lost his, you know, family. And he didn't lose that part of him. And I love that they showed that aspect. He never lost any part of him being a human, especially when it comes to having kids. So he didn't act absolutely like isolate himself completely from human existence, or, you know, having a life or being able to talk to people. He still had. And it was awesome to see that part. And I think people don't realize that about John Bernthal's portrayal, how really good he is at doing that role and being able to bring out Frank Castle in the Punisher. If you've seen Dolph Lundgren's Punisher, all you see is the Punisher. If you see, I forgot all the other two, that the guy that did Warzone, and I forgot who did the one before that with John Travolta. But all you kind of see is the Punisher. I mean, well, the one with John Travolta, you do kind of see Frank Castle, but it wasn't a good version of it per se. It felt really drab compared to him. I mean, like, you really felt within everything, every word that John Berthold has said in his lines, you felt the pain. You empathize with the pain, or you sympathize with the pain in his voice. Like, in a beautiful day, he probably would have a different voice, but he sounds so gritty, worn down, like, and just beat down, but he's still fighting. And you can hear that in his voice every time. So it's hard for me to really always say that, but I actually did find the words to say it. So his role in this from start to finish was absolutely phenomenal at all best. We also got Ben Barnes is back as Billy Russo now. He was great as the role. He was really great at playing Billy Russo. My only negative possibly for this entire series is that, one, his makeup was not done good enough. Like, the way that he was scarred up at the end of The Punisher. I'm wanted to see the Jigsaw that we all read in the comics. You know, for most people who read the comics, Jigsaw is so disfigured. He has stitch marks all over the place. And I know there was a time where I think he didn't have as much, but then Punisher kept just, every single time, the Punisher just kept mutilating him every single time, and his face becomes more disfigured every time they meet. They never got to that point. They never got to that point, and I was always, that part I'm disappointed in. That part I'm really disappointed in, because, well, with the fact that I don't know if it had anything to do with the fact that we don't know if this show is going to be canceled this season, but they decided to cut ties with the character, and we never got to see him any more disfigured than he was before. Like, if anybody's seen Jigsaw, the only thing I could give real credit for Punisher Warzone, the movie, is that their Jigsaw looked just like Jigsaw from the comics. Like, his face was stitched up everywhere. It was just massacre. His face, Ben Barnes' role as Billy Russo and Jigsaw in this case, his face was just barely scarred enough to still, like, somebody was still, like, had sex with him, or they're like, he still looked like a model. He still looked like he could come off as a model. And it was more to prove him, because the psychologist actually end up messing with him anyway. So it's like, you know, the psychologist Krista DeMont actually end up falling in love with him anyway, because they were both scarred in some ways. But I'm still saying, like, he would actually, if he put on a suit and he still had that scars, women will still go after that dude. I needed him to be like, just totally, like, just do a whole makeup job. I don't understand why they didn't go full blast and pull the trigger on that, but I thought that was a little bit one of the negative, lackluster things that I had about him. Otherwise, his portrayal of the Russo character was great. It was absolutely great. He was absolutely the lead antagonist of this, and that showed. But the fact that he used a mask, which looks like the face that he should have, was kind of a, it kind of didn't take away from it completely, but as a comic book fan, the same way that I kind of felt about, like, Venom and how they should have really treated the Venom character is on the same path as the way we're here. It's like, if you're really going to make it, especially with everything that Marvel has done, and, you know, we watched the recent Spider-Man Far From Home, we saw Jake Gyllenhaal in a completely, in a complete designed Mysterio costume. Why is it so hard to put stitches on this dude's face and make him, like, just really, really make him go crazy? You know, that was my only thing. He was psychotic for a different reason, but not because just of the scars in his face or whatever. So that was my only beef about that. But otherwise, his character was awesome. His character was absolutely awesome. It was just the visual aspect of him was the only thing that bothered me. Then we got Jason R. Moore returning as Curtis Hoyle. Amanda, every time I saw him last season, I was like, okay, when he's going to die? When he's going to die? Because they always do this. They don't always do this, but some of my favorite characters always end up dying in this movie. And he was also a really good character, like a character I favored in here. But I felt like Ben Reilly, who I loved in the first season of Daredevil, and I was like, why did they kill him off? He was actually a very important character, a prominent character in the Spider-Man universe, and they killed him off on the Daredevil first season. I was like, damn. So now we got, you know, Jason R. Moore playing Curtis Hoyle again, and I thought he did really well again. He was a great supporting character and a great right-hand man to Frank Castle as well. And I was just wondering when they were going to kill him off, or when Billy Russo was going to kill him off in this sense. And thank goodness he lasted through the entire series. I mean, just thank goodness. And I don't think he really, really, really ever got injured. I don't recall him ever really getting injured at all. Like, he was fighting a lot this season. He was his backup on a lot of firefights and, you know, snipering, you know, people from afar. But he even did some close-up hand-to-hand combat battles and still survived somehow and managed to get out of it. So he stayed alive and he's still around, and that's awesome. I mean, he really did well. I loved his character. He was kind of he's kind of the Diggle of the show. He kind of always, you know, while he understood what Frank was doing. He also wanted to make sure that he had his head, you know, pretty much together, you know. And when he starts to go completely overboard, he would try to bring him back down a peg in this. So he did really well in this one. Amber Rose Riva as Dana Madani back again. Just total badass. Just not only just stunning. I mean, it's hard to deny how stunning she is. Now, she grew her hair, and I loved her with the shorter hair, with the shorter length. But that's just, you know, minor details, nitpicking, if you will. Doesn't matter. She's still really drop-dead stunning. I mean, like, diamond cut. But more importantly, she is a total badass, and she's continued to be a badass, even with the fact that she was very traumatized after the head wound that she got, somehow survived. She is a woman. She's kind of like the badass version of Aunt May, because Aunt May has been through some really crazy things throughout her entire, you know, comic book history. A lot of times she should have been dead, and she hasn't. And this is kind of the same thing with Agent Madani. And it's Detective Madani. But regardless, it is Agent now. But throughout, she sticks her head out there. She's not just a pretty face, not just another pretty face. She really shows that she could be as badass as any of the rest. And in this case, you know, don't mess with this woman. She will come at you hard. And she showed a lot of great moments in this, to the point that you didn't know whether it was going to happen with her and how she was going to react and who she was going to end up, you know, whether she was going to end up becoming Frank Castle herself in some scenes, but also just trying to find justice and get rid of Billy because she realized how dangerous this guy really is in this point. So loved her role as always. She did phenomenal throughout from start to finish as well. So kudos to her on that. Josh Stewart was the newest edition of this. Josh Stewart has played a villain in so many different shows. The first time I ever saw him was on a season of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The funny part about him is that he always plays this really jaded, sickly looking dude that is just like one of the most dangerous guys you could ever face, and you don't want to mess with this guy. Even in real life, I don't think I would want to hang around with Josh unless somebody else would be here. I would have to see how his character is, because he plays a very scary dude every single time, or a dude you just can't trust every single time. In this case, he played John Pilgrim, who, my God, no pun, that character was really good. There was some sort of, it wasn't a total antagonistic character. There was some gray in his situation. Like, you knew he was doing this for a purpose, and his purpose was to try to see his family again, because the Schultz apparently had his family, or was taking care of the family or something. And in exchange, he had to, you know, do a lot of these jobs. He had to get rid of all of these people that were trying to frame their son. Their son just happened to be the senator, who is also gay. And there were also pictures out there showing that he actually was, that's him kissing his partner. This is what led to, you know, Rachel, or Amy is now what she's called later on in the film, in the series. This led to her friends being killed and her barely surviving and her running into Frank and Frank finding out what's going on with her. This is what it's all leading to. But John Pilgrim is the actual assassin that's supposed to be taking her out. So you got a new big threat along with Billy Russo that they have to go after in this case and try to come down on. And they lead to some really interesting dynamic situations as well throughout this season. But he played a very convincing don't mess with me type of dude who just happens to be a priest or a preacher or a pastor of some sort, because he lived by the book throughout this whole entire thing. He lived by the book. The other thing too is that I didn't know, and I'm not really sure where this goes, because there was some type of, I don't know if there's some type of Nazi type of thing going on, or Nazi Jewish type of, you know, situation going on with this, because they showed in one of the scenes a guy raising up his tattoo to John Pilgrim, and before John Pilgrim like killed all of them you know, it just became a thing. It was really interesting. Maybe it was just for that one episode. It wasn't tied into everything else, but it's really interesting that his character was in there. And I got to really say if John Pilgrim is an actual character, because he also did not die in this season. And it became something totally different as to what happened with him in regard to his kids and his wife and this thing. So we will see. But John Stewart really, Josh Stewart actually, really, really great role. Really, really gripping role that he had in here. Then we got a very interesting character here, Florina Lima. And what's interesting about this character is that I was trying to figure out where have I seen this character before. It took me 5 episodes to figure out that this is Alex from Supergirl's ex-girlfriend, the one that she was actually supposed to marry and she left the show. She's in here wholeheartedly as the psychologist or psychiatrist for Billy Russo in here, who winds up getting in too deep with him in this case. So this always happens. This always happens. The same thing happened on Split. Like, I love psychology, but I don't know, man. It gets sometimes if stuff like that happens, I might have to really reconsider ever wanting to take on jobs like that. But, you know, she plays the role of Kristen Dumont. And very interesting. It's almost her role reminded me a lot of Harley Quinn, which when she was Harleen, she basically was going, you know, she was doing an assessment of the Joker. And they were having sessions every time. And then apparently, eventually, she got in too deep with him because he kind of really manipulated her. He out-manipulated the psychologist. And this is kind of the same situation here. And also, she got a little bit too emotional due to the fact it was too close to home of situations that she was still fighting about her own phobias and situations in life involving a window when her father threw her out off the window. And she was still battling her pain. So her idea at first was to actually empathize with those people and try to help them like she was helped. And by doing so, she just met the wrong dude, and that wrong dude, you know, turned her up pretty much. So, but her role in this was really good too. She's always good. I actually always liked the characters that she that Lima plays in. This was no different. I actually really appreciate it. Gloria Wickham, Gloria Wickham, who played Amy Bendix, who was in fact the young teenager that was being protected by Frank, and in some cases Curtis, and in some cases Madani. And she did really well. I liked her. She was kind of a person who, like, she was a scrapper. Really scrappy kid. And she did she knew how to handle herself. She was pretty much playing a survivor at this whole thing. She did make a lot of dumb team mistakes all the way through, but it's just one of those things you got to expect. But every once in a while, I really wish they would have a team that actually knew common sense. In some cases, like, if you hear a gunfight and you hear the guy that's involved in the gunfight say, don't come near it at all. No matter what, don't come near it. Even though if you got a shotgun, even though he taught you to have a shotgun, you do not go near it. At least until you hear silence, and then you go check on it just to be sure. But you got to be careful. She tried to go in during the gunfight, and I was like, you idiot. And didn't wind up getting caught. So it was like, I felt like that was such a cliche moment for that character, but otherwise, I liked her character because she always, you know, she knew how to handle herself. She knew how to handle, you know, regardless of her running off and trying to get away from the people who were trying to kill her. She knew how to handle herself. There was actually one good episode, too, where she went over a friend's house and the friend actually set her up to try to get taken. And she figured it out and ended up texting Frank the actual address. And when it was all over, she hit the girl in the midsection. I've never seen a midsection kick ever to where the girl balls up and like as if it was a guy being kicked in the midsection. That was a funny moment. I was like, okay, you learn something new every day. They can be injured in some case. She really kicked her hard. Probably with the shoe's edge too at the tip. So, but I liked her character. It was, for what it was good. She wasn't totally annoying like the kids in Fear the Walking Dead season 1. It wasn't totally like that at all. She kind of knew how to handle herself at times, and she was willing to learn how to handle herself. But her character played off for what it was. And at the end, they end up having a bond that was really cool because Frank kind of almost fathered her in a sense. It was really cool. Royce Johnson returns once again as Detective Brett Mahoney. I love his character, no matter which show he was on. And I believe at this point, he was in every single Marvel Netflix show. He was definitely on all three episodes of Daredevil because he was mostly connected there. He was on Jessica Jones. I believe he was a part of The Defenders as well. Was he on Iron Fist? That's another thing. I got to see if he was in any of the seasons. I think he was in the season of Iron Fist. But he once again returns, and I guess this may be the last time, or we might see him during the next Jessica Jones season that is destined to come out as well. And he was, I think this is the most we've seen him on this show. He was trying to help Madani, or rather trying to help Madani fight with her situation and trying to make sure she doesn't make any mistakes or do anything that she regrets, which that didn't help anyway. And there were times when he had to deal with Frank Castle himself, and he had to think, use his critical thinking, like, you know, do I take him in? Or, you know, there were some really crazy moments with him. Really, really crazy moments with him that he had to really check himself out and see if it was a good idea to do what he normally would do on a normal basis in his consideration. But he's always great. I like to see, I love the growth of his character, because when we first seen him on Daredevil, he was just a normal beat cop. And throughout all of this, by the end of that, he wound up being detective because he was helped by Daredevil as well. So, you know, and Foggy at that to some extent. So it was awesome seeing him back again and really taking control of the situation as much as he could. But Royce Johnson is awesome in this too. Then you got Annette O'Toole in Corbin Burnson, who was Elijah Schultz and Anderson Schultz, the people behind all of the mess, all the killings, all the kidnappings, the $5 million bounty on the Punisher and Amy. These guys weren't on air much, but as near the end of the actual series, you find out that they're a part of it, and you see how they manipulated John Pilgrim as well, you know, with his kids and family and such, and they were just horrible. They were just horrible. Even so much to the point that their son, who they were protecting throughout the whole entire time, was so unaware of what they were doing through this whole time. And I forgot what did Curtis say about that? It was when, you know, they kept him under wraps and unaware of any of the things that they were doing because they didn't want him to be a witness to any of it. In case the situation gets questioned. I forgot there's a term for that. There's an actual name for that, and I forgot because Curtis mentions it on in the actual movie. I mean, the actual series. But yeah, man, they were awful. They were absolutely awful in this deal. So they did a good job as villains, but they didn't come off as the main villain to me. You know, it was like the Wizard of Oz after all this. You finally see the wizard. It's like, oh, okay. But that he wasn't the real focus of it. It was more or less, you're focusing on the witch in this case, because the witch was actually the one that was doing all the antagonizing. In this case, the witch in this movie, in this series, was in fact John Pilgrim to some extent, and then mostly Billy Russo in another extent. Like, these two were just the wizard at the end when you finally get to them and you figure out they're the cause of everything, so you had to deal with them, and they did. So they really, really did at this point. And like I tell you, when I tell you they don't hold back on this series, the Punisher is the Punisher in this series. It doesn't matter who you are. It does not matter. You're going to get yours if you deserve it. So these standout cast members, they're all great. They all did a phenomenal job, in my opinion. Even Billy Russo, who didn't look like the Jigsaw that maybe myself or maybe some other comic book fans of the series wanted to see, but he played the role. I really wish I just understood why he didn't pull the trigger completely on that. No pun on that. So, favorite scenes I got to say out of the entire series. Episode 3, Scar Tissue. The goof who thought he could get away with antagonizing Billy Russo on a bus. I thought that was a funny scene because it's like, one, you bear, I don't know where in this day and age you're going to see somebody become that much of a douche and antagonize somebody to that length of thinking that they're not going to do anything back or they're not going to respond. If the dude, is this a New York thing? Because this was New York apparently. So, you know, the dude got his at the end, but he, you know, Billy also got a really cool ass coat and glasses out of it as well. And that was just the beginning of the episode, but they also, got to see Amy's backstory of what led to this whole entire situation of having a $5 million bounty on her. And as she, you know, finally in a place where she can feel comfortable, but she ends up hiding under the bed. And that leads to the backstory of her with her friends and all this stuff. And they had the two negatives of the film that involved the senator and the and his partner, you know, kissing. And which led to all of the shooting and death and everything when she returned. It was really interesting that they brought that back up, that backstory up too. So you get to know a little bit more about Amy. And I think that's where you really, if they didn't have that backstory, I think it would have been hard to really like Amy's character to some extent and why she did what she did in all, and some extent. And she, again, she's a teen, so she will do stupid things, but she still remained a likable character nonetheless. Then we got episode 5, One Eye Jack, the fight scene in the gym. Loved it. More or less the significance of that scene, because me as a both a wrestling fan and a mixed martial arts fan recognized two people in this scene that were in there. One was the Dean of Mean, Keith Jardine, retired MMA fighter from UFC. I love Keith Jardine. He was always a great, great fighter, great personality, a very intelligent dude, an extremely intelligent dude. And he just left mixed martial arts and pursued acting after a while. He has a very interesting win-loss record in UFC. I think he fought Brock Lesnar, and that was that. I think that was one of those deals. One of his last fights was with Brock Lesnar, believe it or not. I think he did one afterwards, but there were times he would win, and then there were times he would lose. It was like a mixed bag, but always he had an entertaining kind of fight for the most part. Vladimir Kozlov, formerly of the WWE, was another one that was in there. His real name is Oleg. And his last name, I believe, is Kozlov in there. But it's really long. I follow him on Instagram, but it was really interesting. I think he follows me, too. But it's really interesting and great to see him on there as well. And their fight scene was insane. If you really want to see how violent the Punisher can be, look at what he did to Keith Jardine in this film. Now, again, this pisses me off because the makeup job and the effects that they did on Keith Jardine's face after Frank beat him senselessly with a damn 5-pound plate, like it was brass knuckles, and literally restructured his face to a way that you could not recognize him. Why couldn't they make Billy Russo's face scarred up like that, like stitched up and scarred up like like Jigsaw, like should be? Again, that to me just it really stresses me out with that one. But that one is so great for that moment alone. Episode 6, Nakaza. Amy and Frank goes to develop the incriminating photos at some creepy guy's studio, which is like a studio for like, is a couch. It's one of those couch camera studios. I forgot what they call those. But this one in particular was for like minors and teens and you know, underage teens and all this stuff. So it was one of those type of situations, and Frank wasn't trying to hear it. They needed to develop the photos, but in doing so, you know, just discovered all this. When Frank saw the costumes that they were having, he was like, nope, I'm not leaving out here without that. The funny part about it is he was about to kill the dude, but Amy stopped him, and instead she was like, if you really want justice, you can actually burn the whole entire place down. And that's what they did. So that's how that episode started. But that was the one thing I remembered about that episode. I really enjoyed that. I just tell you, Ben, with all the things that are going on and all the people that we're discovering and things that's going on today, you better pray that we never really have a Frank Castle ever. True indeed. That is for sure, especially the things that I know. I tell you what, man. It just be glad there is no such thing as a Frank Castle, or will ever be a Frank Castle as long as we live. And hopefully justice will definitely come to fruition someday with people like that. Episode 11, The Abyss. We get to see the return of Karen Page. I was wondering if we were going to see anybody else aside from Mahoney in this series from the past series. Karen Page returns, and she looks to help. She comes back to see and represents Frank as his lawyer, unbeknownst to probably Matt and Foggy. But, you know, if you've seen the first season, you know she has kind of intimate ties with Frank to some extent. And she goes out to help him. And she also is an advocate of his justice, you know, so to speak, and wants to make sure that he's okay. So this episode was really important because before that, episode 10 showed a big firefight between Billy and Frank, which led to him doing a spread out of bullets at the top of this warehouse area. He goes up to the warehouse and finds three women shot and killed. Frank believes that it is him. In fact, the whole thing was set up so the cops could come in and find Frank in the room with these women and think that he killed them all during a gunfight. And Mahoney almost believes that, but Madani doesn't, because she understands his code. She understands Frank Castle's code, as does Karen Page. So those two end up teaming up to find, you know, just prove that he didn't do it and to look deeper into it. This is, again, what I loved about this episode is what I talk about all the time when people really use critical thinking and do your homework about information that you hear about people. If you hear somebody is accused of certain things, don't just read the headlines. Go deeper and do your homework to really find out what's going on. Trust me, I know this for a case. And these two went in. They didn't believe any of what they heard. So what they did was, in fact, go in and investigate the situation. Her being a reporter, her, Karen being a reporter that she used to be. Madani, who is the investigative, detective in this case, they did their homework and they investigated. They went deeper to find the information that they looked for. This is a clear lesson for anybody. If you know somebody, or if you heard somebody that is doing wrong in the world, but you don't want to believe them, do your own homework. Sometimes I believe is people don't want to believe and they don't want to put an effort to do it. And they just want to, have the ignorance is bliss type of mentality. No, do your homework. Realize that some people aren't who they think they are. And when you figured it out, take action on it. Do something about it. Definitely. This was a definitely good example of that here. And when they went to go find out, they went to the coroner, looked at some of the bodies and found out that the bullets were close range and found out that Frank couldn't have been the one to do it because he wasn't close range when they were doing it. And some of the bullet, the dust from the bullet or the debris from the bullet was still fresh on the bodies. So he couldn't have been the one to do it. It was too close range. It had to have been a few feet. That's when you knew that he was innocent and they decided to, free him from the hospital and create a whole diversion. Now, this included a funny moment when Karen had to give, agreed to give the coroner her shoes for some reason, which he was wearing out of the actual, while they were evacuating the building. And Mahoney caught on and found Karen Page. And it was a great moment when Mahoney detected her. It's like, Karen, what are you doing here? And where's your shoes? She looked at him back and had the greatest line ever. She's like, I donated it to a good cause. He knew right there and then that it was something that, they were the cause of it. He couldn't really do anything about it. But the way she worded it, what can you do? So that also led to Mahoney going blitz on apprehending Frank Castle and really making sure he doesn't get away. But come to find out, Frank ended up saving him from a tragic situation for Detective Mahoney, and that kind of changed him off on it. So that was a really great one. And then we got the last episode, The Whirlwind, where Frank discovers who is finally behind all of this, the chaos and the kidnapping of the and decides to kidnap the senator and set up an agreement with the Schultz family Now, again, I said the senator didn't know about what was going on. So when he finally heard them talk about everything and not denying it, it really put him in a place. It put him in such a place right there. And this led to them meeting up. Well, but now, before that, Curtis and the senator agreed to, like, get in touch with Detective Mahoney to first get him protection and for the senator to, you know, admit the crimes of what his parents have done, because he was distraught. He didn't realize that all of this, he didn't know what was going on or why things were happening or why the Punisher was, you know, was kidnapping him, and why was he beating him up in a case because of that. But when he figured out, he was like, I can't believe this. I didn't know that they were ashamed of me being gay. Not only just that, but also, you know, it was all about them hiding to protect their name in this case. So that led right there to, you know, him doing that. And it was like, I don't think he cared what happened to the parents at that point. But this led to a big firefight between John Pilgrim and the Punisher in this hotel. This also was this scene where dumbass Amy got caught, even though he told her not to do it. So that was an awesome scene. But it also, they were at a, you know, when they were going to meet to do the exchange, it just ended up them two fighting because the senator and Curtis already left to go to Detective Mahoney, and just left Frank just like saying, look, screw it, I'm going to save this girl who he kidnapped, and that's pretty much it. And it's led to what I thought was going to be the end of John Pilgrim, but when he found out, Frank Castle came back in. This is the character Frank Castle come back in, because when he found out that he was actually a father as well and didn't want to kill him, there was some moral ground for Frank here. And they had some agreement to save his kid and also take care of the Schultz. And that's exactly what they did. So this was, I liked the way it ended. I liked the fact that not everybody died, you know, that there was some critical thinking. He's just not cutthroat, but they showed the character, the character of Frank Castle, as well as the character of the Punisher. And again, in Marvel fashion and Stan Lee fashion, you see two different characters that are together as the same person, but you pick your own battles. You put on your different hats here. And that was the situation with that. So at the end, and we got to talk about the ending here because this is really interesting. Now Agent Madani, who works for the CIA, decides to contact Frank and offer him a job at the CIA. Frank easily refuses, saying that he already has a job. And as he's talking to her, he's setting up all of his guns for another venture into another gunfight invasion with two gangs that are about to rival each other right now. But it was set up by Frank to come in here for the kill. And this ends with Frank Castle in trench coat with a new Punisher skull bulletproof vest in here. And that's how the show ends. So it's led to us saying he's going to keep on being the Punisher. And that's how it ends. I mean, I actually love the way it ended because it didn't leave us hanging. It didn't leave it open ending. It's just, that's all who I'm always going to be. You know, and there was no end credit scene. There was nothing at it saying that it was something. It's my knowledge. I didn't see the total ending, but I believe that this was the way it ended. Now, granted, I put it like this. If I go back and see that there is an end credit scene to this, I'll come back and report it. But I do believe that's how the show ended from there. But there was some reports saying that John Berthold said that, you know, he would be okay if the show ended on as it is. And I agree. The way that it ended, they can easily bring it back. But they left it in a way like, if it ends, it ended on an actual end. Not like they did, just like they did with Daredevil, almost, pretty much. They left it with an actual end. It didn't come off with a cliffhanger like they did with Luke Cage or Iron Fist, which a lot of people are still majorly pissed to this day. And I just read an article on Sci-Fi that Michael Colton actually said he went, you know, with the outcry for another Luke Cage season, he can see it coming back, just not now. I think, honestly, I do think everybody knows something about what's going to happen with these shows or whether it's going to go to Disney or whatever in the next 2 years because Netflix still has, you know, ownership of it right now. But to that credit, I did like the way this ended. If it's going to totally end, if it's going to cancel, then hell, this is a great way to end it. You just have a complete two-season series that you could rewatch over and over again. And it everything was met. Everything went to a close. I did forget to mention this too, and this is why I was so pissed off as to them not continuing it. But they did eventually end Billy Russo, who after the fight that he had with Madani, because Madani ended up, well, she didn't kill DeMont. She threw her out the window after she was trying to kill Madani, basically. But she got majorly injured and crippled. Like, I think she's probably paralyzed. She had pins in her. And I'm talking about Krista, the psychologist. She was actually in a hospital, still alive, but majorly injured from the actual, from falling off a three-story, you know, place. And then somehow, some way, Madani shot Russo multiple times. She said like eight, almost 50 Cent, like, amount. And he still managed, he barely was alive. He got the bullets taken out by a doctor, by an underground doctor, whatever like that. But he was still barely alive. He hit himself under, who was it? He hit himself under Curtis's apartment and contacted him, asked him to be the last person to come down there and, you know, be with him before he dies. Now that, I was saying, like, that was the moment I was like, that's when he's going to kill him because they're going to do something stupid. Thank God he did not do it. He called Frank, let him know he was down there, and Frank ended up being the one that, like, say goodbye to him and killed him. Now, I mean, he got his justice. It was great, but it was like, damn. We could have done so much more with this character at this point, but it was what it was. They managed to get his justice back, and he's still out doing being a Punisher, nonetheless. So, overall, loved the series. I mean, the only beef I had was the Russo visuals. But other than that, the season was really good. A really good follow up to the first season. If I do anything, I give it an A- for that reason. I mean, it's just minor things that I think that would have made the series better. But it was a phenomenal season. Great way to end the season if it is going to be canceled, which I got a feeling we're going to hear probably in the next few weeks, or maybe in a month or so. But I absolutely enjoyed it. If you haven't got a chance to check it out, go out of your way to check it out. You won't be let down by this season. Great cast, phenomenal cast, actually. And we'll see what's gonna happen with the future of this series, and we'll see what's gonna happen in Jessica Jones as well. I think if they do Jessica Jones, they need to go out in a bang. They need to start inviting all the old people, like make it a Defenders thing again, because that's probably going to be the last show in the Netflix universe. They need to, do a whole nother Defenders thing for that series, or just do another Defenders, because the Defenders fell off. It fell flat. And I think the Defenders needs a resurgence. By using Jessica Jones' season for it, I think that will be awesome if they do that, because it's going to end soon. I think having an episode, maybe like having Daredevil on once, do a team up, Iron Fist come back, do a team up, maybe answer some questions, maybe involve Luke Cage and see what's going to happen with that. Something needs, like, use that platform to be a closure to everything. If they're going to do it that way, I just really hope that's what happens. So we'll see. We'll see nonetheless. Like I said, this week, and this will do it for this edition of Talk Time Live. Again, thank you guys again for taking the time to listen to this episode. Again, this week I'm going to review Super Mario Brothers U. That's on a Nintendo Switch now, and I'll let you know how that goes, as well as two other fighting games from the ACA Neo Geo library that came out this week. So we're going to check it out, as well as all the news going on in the world of video games. And this Sunday, I have no idea what I'm going to talk about, but we'll see what's coming up and developing. Probably should take a rest for God's sake at this point. But we'll see. If anything develops big time, we're definitely going to talk about it on our Prime show on Sunday. So stay tuned for all that and much more. Again, thank you, everybody, for being a part of this. Check us out. TalkTimeLive.com, Stitcher, Google Play, iHeartRadio, iTunes. Check them out, all those formats and more. Check out our ACMG Facebook group online at facebook.com/groups/ACMG1. We're developing some new things now. It's going to take time, but we're going to make things happen for everybody to enjoy all things anime, comics, movies, and games, of course. Again, go check out all of our interviews, not just of Vic Mignogna, the voice of Brawly from Dragon Ball Super, but many more at Talk Time Live exclusive. I'm continuing to upload more interviews that I've done, and I will have new interviews coming up very soon in the near future. We're in the works of that. You got to understand, these things take time, and you got to work with the schedules of everybody, so they will come eventually. We'll have a good time. We'll talk about some great things in our favorite fandoms. And last but absolutely not least, people, we talked about it throughout this entire episode. Please, with everything going on right now, with 2019 going on, and it seems like there's a transitional season to something that's going to happen big time in 2020, I ask this. On this day of MLK Day, please look out for your brothers and sisters of all kinds, of all colors, of all creeds. Not even just from just everyday life, but just from the harms of, you know, sexual misconduct, abuse, domestic abuse, child molestation, any of those harms. Please be on the lookout, protect and save the ones that you care about, and some you don't, some that you don't even know. Protect and save everybody. Be the hero that they need, because you never know who needs the time to be saved. So I'll leave you with that, and everything else, just stay tuned for all that and much, much more. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you. This has been Dak Xavier Josiah saying, learn to let go, live life, and love all things anime, comics, movies, and games. This is ACMG Presents Talk Time Live. I am out of here. I'll talk to you soon. ACMG Presents Talk Time Live is brought to you in part by Viewfinders Identity Search and Design, your choice for web design, graphic design, and all multimedia development needs. Visit VFISAD.com and let us bring your vision to reality.